The very well-known Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Pei Ches Amid Beis. This is the Shabbos Pei Ches Pei Tes area has the Kabbalah, a lot of the Kabbalah Satorah Agaritas. So this is a story that has been told and retold based on this Gemara. So let's just take a look inside and see, which seemingly is a very simple story to understand, but also once you just think a little bit about the story, there are certain things that really need to be explained. So Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi. Rabbi Shua ben Levi said, "B'shah she'ala Moshe l'marum." When Moshe went up to Shemayim, Amru Malachi Asheris of Nei Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ribona Shalola, Mali Lud Isha Beinenu. What is this human being? What is a person who was born from humanity doing amongst us? So Amar Lahan, L'kabel Torah ba. He's come to receive the Torah. Amru Lefanav. So they said back to him, Takarish Baruch Hu, Chamuda Gnuza, Shegnuza Lach Teisha Meos V'Shim Va'Arba Doros Kodim Shnivra HaOlam. This treasure which you have hidden away, and this is obviously this is some symbolism here, which is 974 generations before you created the world. Atam Avakish Litna Labasa V'Adam. Now you want to give it to humanity? Right, so that's skipping a little bit in the Gemara there. So Amar Lefanav. So they said further, Takarish Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Torah Shata Nosim Li Maksivba, Anochi Hashem Lokecha Asher. Oh, so I'm sorry, what did I skip over there? So Moshe Rabbeinu gets up there, and the Malachim don't want to let him. They don't want to let him get the Torah. So finally, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu that he should answer the Malachim. So he says, "Amar Lefanav, Ribono Shel Olam, Torah Sha'ata Nosim Li Maksiv Ba." So what does it say in Torah? Anochi Hashem Lokecha Asher Hoseicha Me'aretz Mitzrayim. So Amar Lahem, the Mitzrayim Yiradetem. Did you Malachim go to Mitzrayim? Leparo Ishtabadetem. Did you work hard for Paro? Torah Lamat Eilachem. Why should you have the Torah? Shuv Maksiv, but what else does it say in the Torah? Lo yia lecha Elohim achirim, bein agoyim atem shruyim she'ovdin. Right, so are you found amongst the non-Jews who worship Avodah Zarah that you need a commandment not to worship Avodah Zarah? Says the whole thing doesn't even get started. Right, so it says shuv Maksiv, but what else does it say in the Torah? Zachar Yishayim HaShabbos Lekacho, klum atem osim melacha she'atem tzrichim shvus. Do you work during the week that you need to rest? Shuv Maksiv ba lo sisa. Maso matan yesh beneim. You're not supposed to swear falsely in the name of Hashem. Do you do business that you require swearing? Shuv maksiv ba kabedes avich vesimecha avim yesh lachem. Shuv maksiv ba lo sirtzach lo sinaf lo signov kina yesh beneichem yitzahara yesh beneichem. Right. See, every one of the Ten Commandments doesn't apply to you. Miad hodu lo hakadosh baruch hu. So Hashem said that's a very good answer. Okay, so this is the story that you probably heard many times. The Malachim don't want to give Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah, and he gives this brilliant argument, which is that the Torah doesn't really apply to you. So, just a couple of basic points here that really need clarification is that what exactly are the Malachim so upset about when Moshe Rabbeinu wants to receive the Torah? What's bothering them? Like, first of all, can they not? Let's say they really like the mitzvos of the Torah. So can they not keep the Torah now that someone else has it? You know, is it something that's unacceptable to them that human beings should also keep the Torah? They want to keep the Torah. They want to learn the Torah. So can they now not learn the Torah because humanity has it? And furthermore, don't they realize that none of the Torah applies to them? Saying Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't saying major chidushin here, right? They say, don't take our great treasure. Well, the great treasure has nothing to do with you, so I'm going to take it. Right? This is not like some brilliant argument that nobody could have ever thought of had they not pontificated for a few seconds. They could have then come up with just as good of a speech as Moshe Rabbeinu. So it's hard to understand what it is that Moshe Rabbeinu said to them that was such a big chiddush. That's point number one. Point number two is just a side point, which is very famous also when it comes to Kabbalah Satorah. Just quoting in Rashi in Parshas Yisro in source number two, Vayichan Sham Yisrael, the Jewish people camped, right? So we pointed out it says Vayichan, not Vayachanu. So it says Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad. Right? Everybody quotes the first clause in Rashi. Not so many people quote the second clause, but it is there. Aval shar kol achanayos betarumos v'machlokes. Right? Every other time they camped was not so great. But this time, ki ish echad b'lev echad. The prerequisite for being mekabel the Torah was that they had to be ki ish echad b'lev echad. It wasn't enough to do things the way they had always done things. It doesn't say that every other time they camped, things were going so badly. It's just that they didn't have the same level of achdus. So obviously, achdus is some kind of a prerequisite to Kabbalah Satorah. So I think when we can understand the achdus aspect, and we can understand what it is that the Malachi Asharis were trying to keep from Moshe, and what it is that Moshe answered them, based on a concept that we're very familiar with, which is the concept called Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim is one of those things that we say a lot, but perhaps we don't know exactly what it means. I don't know. Just take a survey. What do you think Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim means? I assume you've heard the phrase, right? So what do you think it means? Saying one guy says the food is kosher, and one guy says the food is treif. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim. Right? So what does that mean? Can you eat it or not?
Different opinions.
But who's right and who's wrong? Saying. Who's right and who's wrong? Right? That's the question. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim. So we grow up with this concept, so we just say, yeah, everybody's always right all the time. But you know, not everybody's always right all the time. Sometimes people are right and sometimes people are wrong. So when we say Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim, what do we really mean by that? What are we saying when we say this idea that everybody's right, everybody's good, everybody's, you know, fantastic? We're not going to act upon everybody's actions, everybody's words. We're going to act upon one opinion. So what does it mean that the other opinion is still divrei Elokim Chaim?
He's still saying it
Lishma. He's Lishma. Okay. He's Lishma, but he's wrong. I mean, he's a good guy. There are many wonderful people who've said many, many things that are wrong. So, you know, I would say 80% of the Gemara is just the wrong opinion. And the 20% is the right opinion, but 80% is nice too, because at least they were trying to get it right. They did their best. Is that what you're saying? You might be right, just for the record. I'm making it sound a little worse, but you might be correct. So that's something we have to figure out. So let's look at a couple of sources. There are really three main sources in Shas that discuss this topic, but let's look them over, try to understand what's going on. So the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Chagiga discusses the term Bale Asufos, meaning those who like to get together, those who gather. Elu Tamire Chachamim, Sheyoshvin Asufos V'oskim B'Torah. When it says Bale Asufos, it refers to Tamire Chachamim that sit in groups, in gatherings, and they learn Torah. Halalu mitamin v'halalu mitarin. Some say it's Torah, some say it's Tamei, halalu osrin, halalu matirin, halalu posan, halalu machshirin. They argue, some say it's good, some say it's no good. Shema yomar adam, lest a person say, heich ani lo me Torah me'ata. Now how can I learn Torah? Meaning, I would say, how do you expect me to learn Torah? Everybody just says different opinions, and I don't know what to do with myself. Talmud lomar, kulam nasnu me'roe echad. Right? Kel echad nasnan, parnis echad amram, mipnei adon kol amasim baruchu. Right? So they were all given from one shepherd. Right? One God said that, gave them, one leader spoke them to us, meaning Hashem said them, Moshe Rabbeinu gave them over, and it's all in front of Hashem himself. Dechsiv, aydaber Elokim es kol advarim ma'il. Hashem spoke all of these words. Afata, so to you, Asay oznecha, sorry, ka'apar cheses, should make your ear like some kind of a funnel, right? You can basically take in a lot. Uknei lecha lev mevin lishmoa, As divrei hametamim, as divrei matarim, as divrei osrim, as divrei matirin, as divrei poslim, as divrei machshirin. Make for yourself a heart which can understand and listen to all of the opinions. So again, we're told that Talmidei Chacham are called Balei Asufos, people who get together in large groups and they argue and they say the opposite ideas of one another. That's the opening statement. And then we say, okay, so this just makes life very difficult and complicated and we don't know what to do with ourselves. So what's the answer? No, it's all from Hashem. It's all from one God. It was all given from one leader. And therefore, you should take in all the opinions and try to understand them all. Does that answer the question? How does that answer the question? The question was what? How can I learn Torah if everybody's just saying different things? And the answer is, no, it's all in the Shemayim, so take it all in. So what was the problem? What was the solution? So what was the problem? What do you think the Gemara's problem was? What? There's more than one answer. So I have a question. I have a question, and the answer is yes and no. Right? Oh, thanks for nothing. Right? Thanks for nothing. You know, I asked you a question. You gave me 15 answers. I'll give you 3 answers. Yes, no, and maybe. And it depends. I'll give 4. Right? So, how does that help me? And then the answer is, take them all in. Lovely. Lovely. So that the answer is, you're right, that is taka problem, so listen to all of them. Because they're all minishamayim. How are they all minishamayim? They're saying the opposite things of one another. So it's a very difficult problem to solve. That's Gemara number 1. Gemara number 2 is Gemara in Erevin. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Shmuel, Shalosh Shanim Nechleku Beishamay Beisilo. Beishamay Beisilo argued for 3 years, Halalu Omrim Halach Kemoseinu, Halalu Omrim Halach Kemoseinu. Each one thought they were correct. Yotza Baskol V'Omra, a Baskol came out and said, Eilu Ve'Eilu Dibrei Elokim Chayim Heim, both opinions are the word of the living God. V'halacha ki Beis Hillel, and the halacha is in accordance with Beis Hillel. So that's what the Baskol said, and that's the reason we paskel like Beis Hillel. V'chi me'acher she'elu ve'elu dibrei Elokim Chayim ipnei ma zachu Beis Hillel lekvoa halacha kemosan. So if both are dibrei Elokim Chayim, so what was the merit of Beis Hillel that they got to be the ones that we paskin like? V'pnei shenochin va'aluvin hayu. Because they were pleasant and they were disgraced. Meaning they would you know, put up with their own personal disgrace and not say anything. V'shonin divrei'en v'divrei b'shamay. And they would quote both their opinions and the opinions of b'shamay. V'lo od ela shemakdimin divrei b'shamay l'divrei. Not only that, but they would always quote Bishamai's opinion first. So the Baskol comes out and says, the halacha is like Beis Hillel, that's why we paskin like Beis Hillel. And why is it that Beis Hillel got to be the one we paskin like? Because they were, I don't know, what one word would you use to describe what the Gemara said? They were polite. Okay, so then we never need to take another vote. Whenever there's a machlokas in halacha, we'll just see who's the nicer one, who's the more polite, who's the sweeter one, right? And we won't paskin like the mean person ever. So that's the way we paskin halacha, right? So we have two machlokas, and one guy is a little tougher, and one guy is a little nicer. So pick the nice one. That seems to be the only criteria for having the halacha be like you. Very strange. Very strange. That's source number 2. And then source number three is a discussion in the Gemara in Gittin. And the Gemara in Gittin quotes from the story of the Pilegish Begiva. The Pilegish Begiva started off where the husband got angry at her and he sent her back to her father's home. So Vatizana Alav Pilagsho,
Rav Yasser Omer Zavuv Matzala, Rav Yonasan Omer Nima Matzala. Whatever the, I don't want to get involved with the machlokas was exactly. One says it was a, there was a fly in the food, and one says there was a hair. I don't want to get involved with this. But Va'ashkechei Rav Yasser Le'Elio. And Rav Yasser one day was talking to Eliyahu HaNavi, Amalei, Maika Avet HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, once you have Eliyahu HaNavi's attention, you might want to find out some cool stuff, like what is Hashem doing right now? So Amar Lei, so Eliyahu Navi said back, Asik b'Pilegish b'Giva. He's learning the topic of Pilegish b'Giva. Umayka Amar, what is he saying? Amar Lei, Ev Yasar b'Nikachu, Omer Yonasan b'Nikachu Omer. So he says, my son Ev Yasar says this, my son Yonasan says that. Meaning he's quoting both of your opinions. Amar Lei, so Ev Yasar was upset about this. Chas v'Shalom. Mi ika sveika kameshmaya? Is there a suffix in the in front of Hashem? Amalei. So Eliyahu Navi answered back. Elu ve'elu divrilo kimchaim hein. No, both are divrilo kimchaim. Zuvuv matza v'lo hikpid, nima matza v'hikpid. He found a fly and he was willing to live with it, but he found a hair and he wasn't willing to live with it. So that's what happened. And meaning you're both right, but one of you is more right. Meaning, it's really, the answer is it was a Nima. But you both got part of the story right. So Amar, let's just skip a little bit. Ika de Amre, just one line. Ika de Amre, skip that as well. Okay, Amar Av Chizda, you see where that is, just skipping a line and a half? The next word on the line is, the first word on the line is Adam. Ema yisera b'soch beso. A person should never create too much fear inside of his house. Meaning, you don't rule your house with an iron fist. Sha'arei pilegish begiva hitel alea bala ema yisera, because the pilegish begiva all started because the husband was so makbid about little things, and he created a situation where everybody was afraid of him. V'hipila kama rivvos mi Yisrael, and it caused thousands of deaths in Klal Yisrael, meaning it all started with one guy running his house with an iron fist and getting so angry that he threw his wife out of the house. So that's what, and that led to thousands of deaths. Om Rav Yudam Arav, Kol Amatil Ema Yisera B'Soch Beso, Sofu Bali De Shelosh Avelers Gili Arayish V'Yichaz Dama V'Chilu Shabbos. Right? I don't want to get involved exactly why it is, but in the end, a person who has Ema Yisera in his house, everybody's so afraid of him, in the end it could lead to Gili Arayos, Shvichos Damim, and Chilul Shabbos. I'll just explain the Chilul Shabbos one, very bekitzer, is that, let's say the food wasn't cooked properly before Shabbos, and everybody knows if we don't get a good meal on the table, the husband's going to go ballistic, so they're going to end up cooking it on Shabbos. They're going to end up doing being Mechal Shabbos. Let's say the lights are off in the kitchen, or lights are off in the dining room, and we know, or they forgot to light Shabbos candles or whatever, it's too late. So they're going to end up doing it on Shabbos. Or the husband, they're going to make the husband end up doing it on Shabbos. Something is going to go wrong. So Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, and just as an aside, Rabba Bar Chana says, Hadami Rabban, Shlosha Dvarim Tzarech Adam Lomar Besoch Beso, Erev Shabbos and Chashecha. When the Mishnah says that a person is supposed to give three reminders on Erev Shabbos right as it's getting dark. Right? Right as it's getting dark, right before Shabbos starts. Isartem iravtem hadliko esaner. Which is, did you separate Trumas HaMaisros? Did you make an Erev? And, please, you know, you should light the candles. Those are the three reminders that every husband, obviously every husband's already, you know, this only works if you already daven mincha before. You daven early mincha at the office or whatever. And then you come home and you have time to be around the house. Right? That's the poskim, right? That if you have the ability to daven early mincha on Erev Shabbos, you really should do it, because that way you'll be home to be able to help out and make sure everything gets done. Right? It doesn't say the husband's supposed to be the one who's in the shower and the wife is supposed to be holding the stopwatch with 18, you know, set to 18 minutes so that he comes out. You know, obviously, listen, life is tough and it's going to happen no matter what. You know, there's a rule. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong on Erev Shabbos. That's the rule. It doesn't, you know, the rest of the week is really, really smooth, and then all of a sudden, a half hour before Shabbos, the baby starts throwing up, and you have to, you have to go run to the drugstore, you have to call the doctor or whatever. That's just life, but it always happens. I,
I think that in my house, the sink only ever gets stuffed on Erev Pesach. Like, not even Erev Shabbos or Erev Yontif, Erev Pesach. It's like the hardest Yontif to prepare, and like, mainly we end up having, you know, both sides of the family over, and like, whoever heard of the sink getting stuffed? We have a garbage disposal, it works normally the rest of the year, but Erev Pesach, it knows not to work. So, that's just the way it is. But Lamaisa, if the husband can be around to say, Isartim, Iraftim, Adlikwa Saner, he's supposed to be around. So what's the halacha? Tzorech lemimrinu b'nichusa. You have to say it in a pleasant way. Ki heichi delekablu mineh. So that people will accept it, right? That's the pasuk. Divrei chachamim b'nachas nishmoy. The words of chachamim are accepted when they're spoken b'nachas, when they're spoken in a pleasant way. If you just get up there and yell and scream and, you know, you're trying to get everybody, you're directing traffic on Erev Shabbos, so it's very important, right? That's one thing which is the ultimate paradox or the ultimate irony is when people, the most fights that happen in a house on Erev Shabbos are about candle lighting, right? What's the one of the main two functions of candle lighting is shalom bayis, right? So that's why we yell and scream about them. That's why we know that that's the way the Yetzer Hara works. The Yetzer Hara knows that Shabbos candles are for shalom bayis, and Mela, that's where you got to try to chop people. You got to try to get them to feel the most discord over the Shabbos candles. Did you light the candles? Not light the candles. There should never be a fight over the Shabbos candles. That's a very important yisod. If for whatever reason, you know, things are not going smoothly, so everybody has to do their part to make sure things go as smoothly as possible. Okay. So these are the three Gemaras that talk about Eilu v'Eilu. Going back to the main topic, so you have Gemara number one, which says, what are we supposed to do with all these opinions? Just listen to all of them. They're all from Shammai. Then you have opinion number two, the Gemara number two, which seems to say, no, really, everybody's equal, but we're going to pass like Beis Hillel because Beis Hillel is nice. And then you have Gemara number three, which seems to say that really nobody was fully right, but some people were partially right. That seems to be the three ways you can break down this idea of Eilu ve'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim according to these different Gemaras. So, what are we supposed to do with all of this information? So, if you look in this in source number six, it's Shaul Zuchu is Zimchei Tzedek. The reason I quoted it from here is just because he collects the Shita of the Chida, who is also a collector. He collects a lot of other Shita. So just let's read what he says here. This can be found in a lot of different places. V'harav Chida Zal. You know who the Chida is? Chida had a very fancy name because his name was an acronym and his last name was also an acronym. The Chida was Reb Chaim Yosef David Azulai, and Azulai is also an acronym. Isha Zona V'chala Lo Yikachu. So it's actually most people named Azulai are Kohanim, because that's the pasuk for a Kohen in Parshas Emor. It says Isha Zona V'chala Lo Yikachu. That's a command of who a Kohen is not allowed to marry. So that became a Sephardi Kohen name, Azulai. But the Chida's last name was Azulai, and I believe he was not a Kohen. So, you know, it's like some people named Kohen aren't Kohanim. So I actually have, I've had students who were, I had, one year I had two students in my shir named Kohen. One was a Levi, one was Yisrael. So it happens. So the Chida, he writes in a Sefer Pesach Inayim, in Masechus Bav Metzia, right, that sugi in Maseches Bav Metzia was the argument of Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, right? And we mentioned that last week, I think, the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim about the Tanur Shalachnai, and Rabbi Eliezer kept making all these miracles to say the Allah is like me, and Rabbi Yeshua kept saying, your miracles don't mean anything. So in his commentary on that story, the Chida gives three approaches. Whoever we're not paskening like is not correct. Since you can't really appreciate the light until you see the darkness, and you can't really recognize the truth unless you see falsehood, so too is this opinion. Delo yuvan v'yisyashev me'atzmuso ela me'hafocho. You're not going to understand something on its own, why it's so good, unless you understand the opposite of it. Lochein, Amar Hashem al Moshe, Divrei ha-mezaken v'ha-mechayven, v'chayotze, ki mitoch ha-svara d'chuya, tivne, v'tekonin ha-amitis, right, amitis, ha-chad, that's one answer. So this is the least feel-good of all the answers. Meaning, really, yes. Really, one opinion is correct, and one opinion is dead wrong. But you're never going to really appreciate what something is unless you also appreciate what it is not. And therefore, when you have the wrong opinion, you come to understand what the correct opinion is. And that's why it's kedai to listen to all of the opinions. And based on that, you can explain all the Gemaras. The Gemara number one in Chagiga, and this is the one that's clearest, explained most clearly from what he's saying over here, from the first answer in the Chida, which is, you should listen to all the opinions. They all come from Sinai. Does that mean they're all right? No! Only one of them is right. But Hashem wants you to listen to all the opinions so that you will properly understand all of the opinions. And then, when you figure out which one is right, you'll really understand it. You'll really understand it. You know, if you get into an argument with someone who holds the exact opposite of you on any matter, you know, you have a person, a Republican, argues with a Democrat. So, what ends up usually happening is that the Republican ends up a starker Republican and the Democrat ends up a starker Democrat. Why? Because they've just hashed out all their issues and they found where it is they differ. And now everyone's super clear on why they don't like that guy, but they do like their opinion. You know, generally speaking, once in a blue moon, someone actually convinces somebody of something else. But more often than not, you come out with a stronger and clearer and more meaningful view of your own opinion. But not everybody is right. In the end of the day, one is right and one is wrong. But we never would have understood the correct opinion and when it does apply and when it doesn't apply and what's the exception to the rule, what's not the exception to the rule, if we wouldn't have had a full-on argument from one end of the spectrum to the other. And once we had that debate, now we really know what the halacha is. We not only know what the halacha is in the place where they were debating it, but we know how to apply it to all kinds of new places because now we understand it so clearly. That's what the other opinion is for. That's what Divrei Elokim Chayim means. Everything is the word of Hashem because Hashem wants it to be clear what the wrong opinion is so we know what the right opinion is. That's the first opinion that they quote in the it's the first opinion that they quote in the Rishonim. But I didn't see it quoted in the Rishonim. I saw it in the Chida and in this, if you look in this Makor in the Zivchei Tzedek, he actually goes through all the opinions, but I figured we'll see the other two, which are perhaps the same opinion in the actual Rishonim. This is the most famous of all the opinions, the Ritva and Meseches Erevin. The Ritva is commenting on the Gemara that we saw, which is Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim by Beishamai and Beisila. So he says here, Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, Shalu Rabbanei Tzarfas. The French rabbis asked, right? That when the Ritva wants to quote the Balei HaTosfos, he calls them the Rabbanei Tzarfas, the French rabbis. Ritva was a Sephardi from Spain. Sephardi from Sfarad. Makes sense. So he says, Heich efshar sheyehu shneyem divrei Elokim chayim v'ze oser v'ze matir. Obvious question. How can it be that one holds that it's mutter, one holds that it's oser, and everyone is divrei Elokim chayim? V'tirtzu. So what did they answer? Ki kisha'ola Moshe l'maram. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up to receive the Torah, l'kabel Torah, wrote, Heru lo al kol davar v'davar. Right? They showed Moshe Rabbeinu on every single matter, mem tes panim le'isser or mem tes panim leheter. Right? So there are 49 ways to say something is usser and 49 ways to say something is mutter. V'shol HaKadosh Baruch Hu al zeh. And he asked Hashem. So he says, what am I supposed to do with this? I don't know what to do. Va'amar, and Hashem answered, she'hezem mosur l'chach me'yisrael she'b'chol dor v'dor. This will be given over to the wise people of the Jews for every generation. And they will be the ones who paskin. They're going to be the decisive factor. So says the Ritva, this pshat of the Balei Tosfos is correct according to the level of drash. But on the level of MS, which is what the Ramban's students, whenever they quote the Derech HaEmes, they mean Kabbalah, right? And on the ways of Kabbalah, the Ritva was a grand Talmud of the Ramban. The Ritva's the two of the biggest Talmidim of the Ramban were the Ra'ah, Rabbeinu Aaron Alevi, and the Rashba, or Shlomo Ben Adaris, and their biggest Talmud was the Ritva, Rav Yom Tov Ben, I forgot. So their biggest Talmud was the Ritva. So he was a grand Talmud of the Ramban, and that's why most of the time he writes very, very clearly. The Ramban is very hard to read in general, and therefore, like a lot of times, you'll find the Ramban's positions much more clearly in the Ritva, or even in the Rashba, the Ra'ah. So that's why people learn less Ramban and more Ritva these days, because the Ritva is very, very easy to read. So, but this whenever he uses the term Derech HaEmes, so says it's a lashon of Kabbalah. It says Yesh Tam V'Sod B'Dover. So there's also a Kabbalistic interpretation, which I'm not going to tell you what it is. I'm just going to tell you that it exists, so that I can laugh at you that you don't know it. I don't know why he says. And he says there's a Kabbalistic interpretation as well. The end. So, but he says Abderech HaDrash, the correct interpretation is that of the Balei Tosfos. That Hashem said there's multiple ways to explain it one direction, multiple ways to explain it the other direction, and you have to decide which one makes sense. That's the sheet of the Ritva. And before we try to plug that back in, I want to see the opinion of Rashi. This is a Rashi and Ksuvis on a sugya that has nothing to do with anything that we're discussing. But basically, what ended up happening is the Gemara had two ways to learn it. The Gemara had, either it was a machlokes, what somebody said, meaning let's just for argument's sake, in other words, there were two Talmidim arguing over what the Rebbe said, versus saying that it was a machlokes between two of the Rebbe. Meaning, so the Gemara says, we would always rather explain the machlokes as a machlokes between two people arguing in conceptual, in svara, rather than have it be a machlokes what somebody said. Because if it's a machlokes what somebody said, then you can't apply this is Rashi's explanation now. You can't apply the concept of elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, because one is absolutely right and one is absolutely wrong. Meaning if I said, the sky today is blue, and one Talmud thought I said the sky is purple, and one thought I said the sky is blue, so one is right and one is wrong. That's it. There's nothing to talk about. One was accurate and one was inaccurate. We would much rather two people be arguing misvara denafshayu. They're arguing based on their own logic. And therefore, we can say, elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. I'll just read a little bit of Rashi. I'll try to read some of that inside. So he says, Hakamashman dehecha de ashkana moroi de pligia dodi kol chara liba denafshe. Right? So if we have two amoroi, and each one is going with his own opinion. Well, he's plugging it back into the Gemara now, so I'm just going to read it quickly. Let me just skip a little bit. Shavkina. You see where the first one line is Shavkina? Shavkina nahi lishna de miflege treyam araya libe dechad. We throw out the opinion that they're arguing according to one person. They're arguing what the Rebbe said. Vinaktina, and we grab onto hahi de miflege treyam araya libe den of shayu. That it's two people arguing their own svaras. We would much rather have two people saying their own opinions than have two people arguing what the Rebbe said. Look at that word, that's a very important word. Mishaker. If there are two Amoraim saying, the Rebbe said this, and the other one says the Rebbe said that, One is wrong. He's lying. Not lying as in like trying to falsify. He's lying as in he's dead wrong. The Rebbe never said that. Avo ki pligi treyam oroi bidin o beisr veheter. They're arguing what's the halacha in court. Or they're arguing whether something is mutter or something is asr. Kol chad omar hachi mistaber taima. Each one is saying that one thinks his logic is a good reason. Ein kan sheker. There's no falsehood here. Kol chad v'chad svarid idei ka'amar. Each one is saying their own logic. Mar yoyev taima lehetera, mar yoyev taila yisura. One has a reason to say it's mutter, one has a reason to say it's asr. Mar medamim milsa lemilsa achi, mar medamim lebin yon achrina. One compares it to this kind of a din, and therefore it's mutter, and one compares it to that kind of a din, and therefore it's asr. The ikal ameimar, and now you can say, elu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim heim. Zimnin, listen to this line. Zimnin d'shayach ha'taima, v'zimnin d'shayach ha'taima. Sometimes you can apply this reason, and sometimes you can apply that reason. Shahatam mishapech lefi shinui hadvarim b'shinui mu'at. Because the reasoning can turn around based on the change, based on a slight change. Based on a change in reality, perhaps, is what he's saying. When you say Eilu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim, things can change in a heartbeat. Maybe you can apply it, maybe you can't apply it. You have to see what the reality of the situation is. But this is Rashi's take on Eilu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim. He says, yes, there is a time where some people are right and some people are wrong. If there's an argument in history, we're arguing what actually happened. What took place? Right? So then we can argue that one is right and one is wrong, and there's no Eilu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim there. But if each one is arguing, I think this halacha is similar to this pasuk in Chumash, and therefore the halacha would be that it's mutter, and the other one saying, no, it's not similar to that pasuk in Chumash, it's similar to this pasuk in Chumash, and therefore it's asr. Or vice versa, or I think we should apply this din, I think we should apply that din. And they're arguing back and forth, and each one has good, strong arguments, good, strong proofs, and one can deal with the proofs, one doesn't deal with the proofs. Now we can say that each one is really divrei elokim chayim, and sometimes one will apply, and sometimes the other will apply. And that's what it means when we say elu ve'elu, that no one is right or wrong, it's just a question of application. It's a question of which arguments are we going to accept. And I think this really works hand in hand with the Ritva. The Ritva said that the way it works in Shemayim is that there are multiple arguments. Mem tes, I don't think is a specific number, right? Because we have another phrase, shivim panim latorah. So if you add up 49 plus 49, it's not 70, right? So, but nevertheless, the idea is that there are multiple approaches and reasonings that can apply every single time. And therefore, to say one is specifically right all the time and the other one is right all the time is a misappropriation of halacha. That's not the way the halacha is supposed to work. You're supposed to understand as many of the approaches as possible, and therefore you can come to a conclusion that applies, not a conclusion that is correct. And based on Rashi and the Ritva's interpretation of Eilu ve'elu divrei elokim chayim, what is halacha? When we say this, so halacha lamaisa, what is halacha l'maisa? How would you define the term halacha l'maisa? So we're going to paskin like one, right? What do you suggest that would mean? We're going to paskin like one opinion or the other opinion. What are we doing when we paskin? What? Right, we follow one, but what are we really accomplishing by saying? We're not saying this. So according to this, according to the first opinion that the Chida quoted, we're saying one is MS and one is Sheker. Now we thank the Sheker opinion, and we have some beautiful, lovely parting gifts for them because they helped us understand the MS, and therefore they too have a place. They have a place at the table. They have a place at the table being wrong, but we're happy that they came because now we can really appreciate. We can really appreciate the opinion that's correct. You know, that's if you like sports, so you can imagine there's two different. My brother, he claims he has an interesting idea that he thinks that anything which is not one person against someone else in an objective standard doesn't count as a sport, right? He claims that, let's say you have figure skating. So he said figure skating should not count as a sport because it's completely subjective to the judges. The judges are going to look at the first person. They're going to look at the second person. You're not really competing with that person. They're not doing, even if it's time trials where you're trying to run a race or drive a car in a certain amount of time, at least you're competing against an objective standard. But when you're dealing with a subjective standard, you don't know. So you become better through the competition. If there's someone else trying to stop you from doing what you're doing, trying to go against what you're doing, you know, therefore you raise your game to the next level. Now people would argue, you know, you could argue that point and say that, no, you know, the other person got score X, and therefore you are trying to do even better. But in the end of the day, you're really just competing against yourself. You're competing against yourself. You don't have that opponent who's forcing you to raise your level. And therefore you're not going to achieve as much. That's the first opinion of Eilu Ve'eilu Devil Kim Chaim. Because this individual was here arguing with me, now I know what the emes is so much better. But according to the other opinion, it's not true. There's no winners and losers, except if it's a historical discussion. If it's a historical discussion about what was said, then obviously you're going to have a winner and a loser. But if we're arguing over what's the halacha based on good Torah, you know, for lack of a better term, Torah dikka svaras or Torah dikka proofs, you know, so then we're both right. We're both 100% right. As long as, like, there's no pusik against me, as long as there's no gemara against me, as long as there's no mishnah against me, whatever it is, then what I'm saying could be right. But in the end of the day, we may or may not paskin like me. How are we going to decide who we paskin like? So Rashi says, hatam mishapech lefi shinui advarim b'shinui muat. Right? And same thing with the Ritva. The Ritva said, hadavar, right? It says, if you figure out the halacha, what the halacha really is, it's being mishadech one opinion with the reality in which we live. And things change from time to time. That's why sometimes you'll see a psak halacha in one generation gets overturned for the next generation. Bein l'kula, bein l'chumra. Because I'm not even dealing with this on a completely spiritual level. If you want, Rev Nevensal has a beautiful piece in his Sichos on Sefer Bereishis, on Parshas Noach. He goes into detail. He explains this on a spiritual level. Also says that the world is on a certain spiritual level, and the halacha is basically matching up the correct opinion that exists on that spiritual level based on where the world is holding, right? And that's how he explains the idea that In the times of Mashiach, we're going to paskin like Beis Shammai. There is such a comment, I think, in the Zohar. It's not so pashut that's for sure true, but that's where that comment could even get started. You know, why would we change the halacha to Beis Shammai in times of Mashiach? Okay, whatever it is, I'll try to get back to that in a second. But according to Rashi and the Ritva, just because we paskin like one opinion over the other doesn't make that opinion more correct. It just makes it more viable for where we're holding in life. You understand? And therefore, it's you could call it almost more relevant to us, much more so than more correct. So let's just for a second try to plug this back in. You have somewhere you need to be right now, or I don't know. I'm not sure what time I was actually supposed to have started today, so because the schedules are a little off. But yeah, you have a couple of minutes, or So let's try to plug this in a little bit. What does it mean that all the opinions are correct? So this is based on, the explanation I'm giving is based on the Maral, and there are many Achronim who write like this. So is today a hot day or a cool day? What do you say? Hot, right? It's hot. Now, if you were coming from the city and you were driving up here, you would say it's cool here because I checked on my phone early in the morning. It was already 15 degrees hotter in the city in the morning than it was here. Now we'll get there because our evenings and mornings are cooler than they are in the city. But I'm saying it was a solid 15 degrees hotter at the time. I think we were at 67. They were at, you know, like 80. I don't know, almost 20 degrees actually. They were at like 80, 85 or something. I don't know. Whatever. So it was much hotter there. So you could say, well, today's very hot because it's hot compared to yesterday, but it's not hot compared to other places. You know, Matan Wexler had to drive down to Boca Raton. I'm guessing it's very, very hot in Florida right now, right? It's probably very hot in Florida. So, saying if somebody from Florida came here, it's also really humid. So they came here, they would say, it's cool and it's dry. You know, this is great. We're sitting here thinking it's hot and it's humid because we're used to, you know, 75 degree afternoons. And, you know, if it's hot, then it's 80 and dry. You know, but we're used to 75 and breezy. So we get hot. So is it hot or is it cold? It's both. It depends what your perspective is. So one guy's going to argue back and forth. How could you say that it's not hot outside? If I stay outside, I get a sunburn and I'm sweating. And the other person can say, how can you say it's hot? How can you say it's not? Wait, that was the person arguing it's not hot outside. How can you say it is hot outside? You know, when I'm in the city, I just stand here and I'm sweating. And here I'm sitting in a chair in the shade and it's nice and cool. So both have valid arguments. It's just an issue of perspective, right? You could say the same thing. You know, you say, what color is this? What color is this book? What? Dark blue. So I could argue it's blue. I could argue it's silver. I could argue it's white. I could argue it's black. Why? So you could argue it's blue because that's the first thing you see. When you look at it, the cover is blue, right? So you could argue that's true. But if you just call it blue, it could be any book in the world. It could be any book. You say it's silver, now you could see the title because the title's written in silver. So the title is the ikker. Who cares about what color the cover of a book is? We care about the name of the book. And therefore, the name of the book is written in silver. And therefore, I want to call this book silver. Now, others would say, who cares about the whole book cover and the title? What matters is the content of the book, right? The content of the book is written in black ink. And therefore, the book is black. But you could also argue, right? If you don't have paper, you can have paper without a cover. You can't have print without paper. And therefore, the ikker is the paper. The ikker is the paper, and therefore you have to say the book is white. So which opinion is correct? Which opinion is correct? They're all correct. None of them is completely correct, meaning it's just a matter of perspective. It's a matter of perspective. It depends based on you, but if I put a gun to your head and I said, you must choose a color, which color are you going to choose? Blue. What about you? Also blue. Right? Okay. So, you have to choose a color, blue? You have a different color, or are you sticking with blue? Blue. Okay. So that's interesting. Like, sometimes you would say, no, based on the aforementioned arguments, I don't want to define a book by its cover, right? It's very bad to judge a book by its cover, right? It's very bad to judge a picture by its outside. Rather, right, that's the Talmudic version, Altistakel Bakankan Alabamashi Yeshbo, right? So saying, I don't want to judge a picture by its outside. So it doesn't work so well in English. But you don't want to judge a book by its cover. So some people say, no, but in the end of the day, my eyes see blue, I'm calling it blue, the end, right? So you can hear different arguments, but if someone says, I'm telling you the book is black because the only thing that matters is what's written in the book, and what's written in the book is written in black, and you're not going to convince me otherwise. So depending on the type of person, depending on the type of personality, background, you know, and really when you get more deeply into it, it's more than that. And the people are going to say their own viewpoint, and no one is going to be more correct than the other, but it's incumbent upon the Chachmei Yisrael to try to come to a consensus as to how we're going to paskin. Not because one is more right, but because that's the way we function. We have to be able to function in a physical reality. Hashem Dafka put us in this planet and said, there's something in this world called halacha. Something in this world called halacha. Halacha is somewhat of a fallacy. Halacha is something misleading. Why is it misleading? Because now what you've taken is the infinite Torah and you've limited it to one viewpoint. So isn't that so insulting and bad for the Torah? The Torah, which has mem tes panim lakan, and mem tes panim lakan becomes one, not even panim, just... You know, just there's no Hebrew word for face. There's only faces, right? There's panim is inherently a pluralized word. It's like mayim. There's no word for water. There's only the word for waters. So you can't take the Torah and turn it into one viewpoint. It's insulting to the Torah. And perhaps that's what the malachim were so upset about. They were saying to Hashem, how can you give the Jewish people the Torah? What are they going to do with it? They're going to whittle it down to halacha l'maisa. They're going to take this infinite concept, this infinite, you know, I don't want to call it a document even, because it only became a document when it was given to us, right? They're going to take this infinite, you know, this infinite work and make it so finite, you know, they're going to turn it into a kitzur shulchan aruch. They're going to turn it into a chayei adam or whatever, you know, something like that. And that's insulting to the Torah. That's the ultimate disgrace to the Torah, is you took something infinite and you made it into a 150-page book. You know, when art school gets their hands on it, they make it back into a 500-page book. But before that, they have, I think they have a 4-volume or 5-volume Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, which is, you know, the ultimate of ironies. You're taking the infinite Torah and you're limiting it by giving it to humanity. Human beings are by definition limited. They only understand one opinion, maybe two opinions, three opinions, maximum. They don't understand the global, you know, the infinite implications of every word and every concept in Torah, because they're limited in their intellect. They can't possibly understand it. And therefore, what are we giving them the Torah for? If we keep the Torah up here, the Torah remains infinite. And what did Moshe Rabbeinu say back to them? They said, you don't understand. We are the tachlis of the Torah. We're who the Torah is for. Because if the Torah just remains where you guys are, the Torah is stagnant. It's ironically, it's one of the great ironies, it's stagnant in its infinity. It remains infinite, but no one's doing anything with it. A greater use for the Torah is to give it to human beings. And what will human beings then do? They will arrive at a limited conclusion, but based on taking all of the opinions in and understanding them and trying to whittle them down to what applies to them. And that's actually doing something great with the Torah. We're going to recreate the infinity of the Torah. And that's what the Gemara is saying in Maseches Chagiga. That's why everyone gets together to hear everybody else's opinion. Why does everybody get together to hear everybody else's opinion? Because the fact that I understand only one perspective, is that something good about me or something bad about me? I can understand one perspective, two perspectives. So is that good or bad? That's bad. Why is it bad? Because there are so many perspectives, and if I was just a little more infinite, if I was just a little bit more broad-minded, to the point that the Malachi Sharis are, and even Lahavdil from that, to the point that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is, I would understand everything, and everything would make perfect sense to me why there are a multitude of opinions, and I don't have to choose, because everything is all opinions at once. That's what the emes is. The emes is everyone is everything. Every opinion in Torah is all of the opinions at once. Meaning, if you have a foolish argument, is today a hot day or a cold day, or what color the book is, everyone understands that. Really, all the perspectives are correct. It just depends on what angle you're looking from. They're all correct, but what do we have to do? We have to apply one. We have to apply one of them because that's where we live. So that's a function of our you know, smallness of humanity, that we have no choice but to whittle it down to one opinion. But that's terrible. That's unfortunate for us. So when we argue that we think our opinion is the only way to go, what we're also saying is that I'm so small-minded, I have no choice but to only think of things one way. I'm basically testifying to my humanity. I'm testifying to my lack of breadth of perspective, which is what I'm supposed to do. Don't get me wrong. That's why I was put in this world. But I'm also, you know, I'm also insulting myself as I do it. When I say I'm right and you're wrong, and you have to see things my way, I'm basically saying we're celebrating our humanity. We're saying that this is the way Hashem made us. But we also have to realize that our inability to see the other perspective is because we are lowly creatures. Because we were created a certain way, and it's therefore incumbent upon us to hear all perspectives. Doesn't say you have to paskin like all perspectives, but to hear all perspectives. Look at, I'm saying, look at what Hashem responded. Heichani lo made Torah me'ata. How can I learn Torah now? Talmud lomar kulam nasnu miroa echad, kel echad nasnan, paris echad amram, mipi adon kolam aysen baruchu. Right? So therefore, they all come from Hashem. Af ata asei oznecha, make your meaning. This is what you have to do. This is why we put you here. So you should hear all the opinions, take it all in, and listen closely, and you'll start to recreate the infinite Torah. That's what Elu Ve'elu Dibur Elokim Chayim means. We're recreating the infinity of the Torah, which is how the Torah keeps from being a stagnant document. In our world, the Torah is a stagnant document, but in reality, it's an infinite living concept of, it's really infinite concepts, right? And that's what our job is. That's why we need to hear our other people's opinions. But what's the ultimate enemy of that? What's the enemy of what we're supposed to be doing when we're learning Torah? What's the ultimate enemy?
Just finding one.
Right, just finding one approach. And that's fine, you're supposed to have one approach. But refusing to listen to the other approaches, that's the ultimate enemy of real Torah growth. I refuse to hear what you have to say. To refuse to hear what someone else has to say stagnates the Torah. It brings that's what the Malachi Asharis were afraid of in the first place. Look what the human beings are going to do. They're just going to turn Kol Torah Kulo into Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and that's it, the end. And they're going to say, we're human, we're limited, we can live with this. And Moshe Rabbeinu was arguing, no, the Torah is for us. The Torah was made for us, and it was made for us to build it from scratch. We're supposed to start from the ground up and build it back up. And that's what the Torah was really for. That's why, by the way, you go to yeshiva, so the student brings up a question, and you say, oh, great question, there's 4 days in Rishonim that discuss that. Well, that's not a great question, that's annoying. Now we have to discuss 4 different opinions, right? Why do we want to have 4 different opinions? A great question would be like, there's one question, and there's one answer, Tosfos answers up the whole question, one fell swoop, it's great. No, we're more excited about the 4 opinions, and we're more excited about the 2 ways to understand each one of the 4 opinions. It's much better that way. We're very excited about, right? Everybody gets excited about Reb Chaim Brisker's style of learning, because then he took everything and he made 2 ways to look at it. Why do I want 2 ways to look at it? I'd get excited if there was 1 way to look at it. But the answer is, we're sensing. It's our neshamas are sensing that there's more here. We're sensing that there's this infinity that we're trying to connect to. And now, when we broaden our perspective and we look at it from all these different angles, right? So then we're doing a tremendous service to ourselves and a tremendous service to the Torah. We're reconnecting to the infinite, right? A lot of the different Hespedim for Avraham Lichtenstein, but one of the jokes that people kept making was he must have had many, many, many hands, right? Because they always used to say, on one hand, you could say like this. On the other hand, you could say like that. On the third hand, you could say like that. How many hands did he have already? He had so many multiple perspectives to look at everything. So you say, well, doesn't that just make him a confused and confusing person? No, just the opposite. Somehow, we're looking at it as the ability to see a multitude of perspectives makes things clearer. Because we're connecting back to the infinite level of the Torah. But the enemy of this is refusing to hear. Not agreeing. Disagreeing is great. Disagreeing is what makes the Torah work. But refusing to listen. That's why we needed achdus. Ki'ish echad b'leiv echad. It does not say ki'ish echad b'deya achas. It doesn't say we had one opinion. We had the same multitude of opinions existed at, you know, I'm sure, at Maimed Har Sinai than it did the rest of the times. But we were belave echad. We had one heart. We said, my heart is set on getting the Torah. my heart is set on getting the Torah, that means I want to achieve greatness, not just for my own sake and to be better than you, but I want to achieve greatness for the sake of the Torah, and therefore I will listen to what you have to say. I'll try to prove you wrong. I'll try to yell at you and tell you don't know what you're talking about and why I'm right. But at the same time, I'll never refuse to hear you out because I realize that that's what the Torah is trying to do for me. And that's why it's so important when there are, you know, Torah perspectives to seek out a multitude of Torah perspectives, because that's really our job. That's what we're here for. And that's what the Malachi Asharis didn't want to give up, because they thought we were just going to take the Torah and ruin it. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, just the opposite. The Torah is for us. It's our job to build it from the ground up. And we're going to do that. And that's why the Gemara in Chagiga celebrates the idea of there being a multitude of opinions and listening to them all. Right? And just to wrap up the other two Gemaras, what do we have here? Beis Shammai versus Beis Hillel. No one was more correct than the other, but the Bas Kol comes out and says the halacha is going to be like Beis Hillel. Why? Because, so you can suggest a lot of things based on this Gemara, but one suggestion perhaps, Nochin va'aluvin hayu. They were very pleasant and they allowed themselves to be disgraced. Right, we know the Midrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu originally wanted to create the world, B'midas Adin, and he realized the world would last about 2 seconds, so he created the world, B'midas HaRachamim, instead. Beis Hillel represents Midas HaRachamim, and Beis Shammai represents Midas Adin. They were nochin va'aluvin, right? There's no one more disgraced than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you ever saw the Sefer Tomer Devorah, right? That's the premise upon which the whole Sefer is built, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the melech aluv. He is the disgraced king. There is nobody in the world that gets his face spat in on a regular basis more than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he takes it. He just takes it. He lives with it. He doesn't have to put up with it for a second, but he does. Right, that's what Beis Hillel was. They tapped into that particular midah about that the world runs on, and they were the better shidduch for this world. Beis Hillel was the better shidduch for this world, and therefore their words were more halacha lemaisa, not more correct, but they were more halacha lemaisa, and that perhaps explains the idea of how la'asid lavo, when we're going to be on a higher level, and perhaps the world can exist on a midas adin level, we could paskin like Beis Shammai. Because Beis Shammai is shaykh to the world on a higher spiritual level, whereas Beis Hillel is shaykh to the world on our level. But just you can add, they were makdimim divrei Beis Shammai ledivrein. Part of their whole mahalach and learning was to listen first. Right? They wanted to listen first. They wanted to hear out Beis Shammai, speak out Beis Shammai, and then say their opinion, because they got it. They knew exactly what we were trying to do when we learned Torah, and therefore we paskin like them, because they were the ones who presented the multitude of opinions, which is goof of the goal of what we're trying to accomplish when we learn Torah. And just apply this to the Gemara in Gittin as well. Rav Yasser said it was a Zvuv. Rav Yonasan said it was a Nima. The answer is, even historically in the Navi, they were both correct. Just the question is, which one drove the guy over the edge? Which one drove him over the edge? So Eliyahu HaNavi was saying that the Zvuv didn't drive him over the edge, the Nima drove him over the edge. So it depends what you look at. Do you look only at the straw that broke the camel's back? Or do you look at the piles and piles of, you know, of other bundles that allowed the straw to break the camel's back? That was the machlokas. But again, it's still part of the same perspective of Elu ve'Elu, that each one is tapping into a chelik of the truth, but neither one has the whole truth. Neither has the whole perspective. Anyway, I just think that this is something that it's timely all year round, but specifically when we talk about Parsha Shoftim, which has a lot of psukim about halachic decisions, right, in terms of Ubasal HaShofet Asher Yiyah B'Yam Mahem, right, and losasur, and we'll talk a little about that a different time. But we should just realize that yes, halacha is important. Halacha is the final decision. But halacha is for us human beings. It's not the limitation of the Torah itself. The Torah itself is infinitely broad, and therefore it's incumbent upon us to recognize that the concept of Elul Divrei Elokim Chayim means dafka hearing out the perspectives that exist, and yes, deciding which ones are best for us, halacha lemaisa. but on the other hand, realizing that the argument between one and the other is due to the lowliness of our humanity, and therefore recognizing that our limited view is not the view, it's just a view and part of the infinite greatness of the Torah.
Have a great day. Sorry.